You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost our culture, current defense, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Golden Globes last night, didn't watch, and really don't care. So if you're expecting a recap of an awards ceremony for movies and TV, I guess, congratulating themselves and patting themselves on the back, I don't recall the last time I watched anything of that nature. Maybe there was a time, maybe, and even then, I think I kind of got swept into it kind of because I had friends who were into award shows, I don't know, in college. Made a thing about it, and I think I kind of got swept into it because of that. But even then, I was going, don't we have something better to do? Like, anything but this? So, I'm a movie fan, yes, I'm an entertainment fan, but I'm just not crazy about these long, bizarre examples of extravagance, I guess, is what it is. Kind of unnecessary. So we'll talk about things of substance this afternoon. What's happening with the auto industry and Donald Trump and what this means for the rail industry? I had a lengthy post on Facebook about this. We'll talk about that. Also, Obamacare becoming Trump care, is that a possibility or will it be completely gutted and repealed? We'll talk about that. All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 50 minutes every afternoon. Christmas officially over in the Brown House. Now, you may go old school and stick with it all the way up until February 2nd, Candlemas, Groundhog's Day, all of the above. Tree is put away. We still have a wreath on the door that my wife wanted to keep up there, even though I was ready to throw it away. Because it was a fresh wreath we don't normally do. But she's like, let's leave it up there, I guess, until it spontaneously combusts, perhaps. We'll just let it ride on out. But I fasted from All Saints Day through Christmas Day, not knowing that I was doing this Franciscan fast that has been around since the time of St. Francis. But I did that, and I have more than made up for it for the past 2 weeks. So good to be out of the Christmas season, because now I have no justification for like, hey, it's still Christmas, right? Which means I'm still feasting. So probably a good pendulum swinging back to some sort of moderation, I would hope. Which, interestingly enough, I had a conversation with my 9-year-old about virtue over the weekend and really kind of talking about the difference between virtue and vice and how even something that appears to be good may not be virtuous if you do it to the point of it becoming vicious. And whether that sunk in remotely, I have no idea. But it was still a good conversation. He asked good questions as we were talking. So not that his behavior after that necessarily suggested that anything made any real sense, but at least we had the conversation. So there is that. Speaking of virtue and what we should be seeing and might be seeing and could be seeing in this coming administration, and certainly with a vow to repeal Obamacare, which, you know, I've said from the beginning, this program was not the best, by any means. However, we as Catholics and certainly our bishops, there's documentation going all the way back to the beginning of the turn of the 20th century, right, 100 or so plus years ago, talking about things of this nature when it comes to the rights of our citizens and the fact that healthcare should be a right. It should not be a privilege. It shouldn't be. Healthcare should not be for those who are affluent, or that the richer you are, the better your healthcare. That's kind of crazy. And Catholic hospitals were there to begin with to provide quality care for anyone, everyone. But when there are bizarre and really unfair caveats within the program that basically says you have to support things that you just don't believe in, especially when it comes to abortifacients, and even from a Catholic standpoint, things like sterilization and forms of birth control that are irreversible, which any birth control, as far as Catholics are concerned, that's a problem. But especially those that are irreversible, that's an undignified treatment of the human person. And when this is included in healthcare plans, and perhaps even to the point that it could be considered abortion supporting, that's a problem. That's a big problem. Not to mention the fact that for business owners and those who are on group health plans and those who are out there trying to keep things afloat, part of their business could be an increase of a 30% increase in expenditures. That's hard to sustain. That's hard to sustain for companies, and there's undoubtedly going to be challenge to that. So these are the things that I have seen as problems. And this is one of the reasons why, even early on, you've heard me talk about the Justice Roberts decision in 2012 on the HHS mandate and the fact, well, it wasn't just the HHS mandate, it was the Obamacare mandate. It was the mandate to have health insurance or face a penalty, which, of course, was deemed a tax, according to Justice Roberts, which that began, I guess, and I'm not sure that I had tremendous trust or faith or confidence in the Supreme Court to do anything reasonable necessarily. But that was one that just kind of began to erode, really just erode any confidence that I could potentially have in trusting the court to make decisions that I thought were reasonable, because I just thought that was an unreasonable decision, especially so for Justice Roberts, who, according to what I understood, was a conservative-leaning justice, and then to make up new language, because it had never even been mentioned that this was a tax. So I've had a significant challenge with the whole concept of at least a hand, you know, the mandate, the forcing not only to have this and to force people to purchase it or face penalties, but then forcing companies that don't agree with these provisions to have to provide those provisions. All of that a problem. All of that a problem. With that said, however, I do believe everyone needs health care. I believe that. I'm a capitalist enough to think that a free market system of some sort is important, but is there a way to have government subsidies, maybe a revamp of Medicare or Medicaid, excuse me, that would say this program is expanded to this and this and this and sliding scale, kind of like what Obamacare does when it comes to premium costs. But is there a way that healthcare plans can all be covered? For instance, there's this, what's it called? MediShare, I think is what it is. This Christian-based platform that has an ethic that says they're not going to do abortion, they're not going to do certain things, they're going to make sure that they steer clear of that. Well, what if that could be subsidized? Right? What if anybody could be essentially subsidized based on the need, based on the actual gross adjusted income, and what is this family doing right now that potentially requires this type of assistance? And if they want this plan instead of that one, well, it should be affordable and it should be available. That, to me, is the kind of plan that could, if you're going to repeal and replace, that's the kind of plan to do it with. Now, will we see that? And apparently President Obama, having had some sort of briefing with Democrats, essentially saying, hey, call it Trump care. I don't care. Which I think is, I think there's something commendable. If he's not concerned so much about his legacy, but he's concerned about those in need, that's great. But again, there's a way to do this and to do it right and still have a federally supported program, not mandated program, a federally supported program that would allow everyone, regardless of pre-existing conditions, regardless of ability to pay, regardless of income, the same degree of coverage across the board. Because when someone is truly in need of medical attention, that's when the playing field begins to level. When someone finds themselves in a situation where it's a dire medical need, everything else is equal, right? I mean, not that we're not equal anyway, but I mean, who cares about socioeconomic status at that point? Who cares about some sort of pragmatism or some sort of utilitarianism even? Who cares about that? That's not what it's about. It's about taking care of people. It's about human dignity, the inherent human dignity of each and every one of us. And we need to support that. We need to find ways to truly have a system that says nobody's going to slip through the cracks. Everybody's going to be taken care of, and everybody's going to be taken care of equally. Now, that may not politically jive with everybody's political beliefs, because it sounds like, I guess, some sort of socialization, or it sounds like some sort of a handout instead of a hand up. I don't know. I don't get it. Because we're basically saying, if you can pay, you do pay. But those who can't pay get the same health care that you get, right? That, to me, which I know kind of already exists, but not necessarily to the extent I'm talking about, where it's a sliding scale and it's kind of a subsidy into whatever program you want to find. Kind of like what I think we're going to start seeing very soon federally, and time will tell how this filters into the states and local applications. But when it comes to school choice, I do believe we're going to see vouchers. I do believe we're going to see ways that those who would normally not be able to afford a private school could make that choice and have some degree of subsidy there, because they're taxpayers. They're already paying into the school tax. Why would they not be able to take that money that they would normally pay? Because those who are paying tuition are paying tuition and contributing to a tax. They're both happening. So I think now, certainly it seems that we're moving in this direction, that we could really see something when it comes to school choice, things of vouchers, things of subsidy, because of the taxes that are being paid. Why not? Why would we not be able to see something very similar when it comes to healthcare? So we'll see where it's all going. There's going to be something. I think we can trust that, because now we do have a Republican-dominated Congress. And President-elect Trump has already vowed to repeal this program. So something's going to happen. What it's going to get replaced with, hard to say, but we'll find out soon enough. Hey, I want to come back and talk a little bit about this interesting dynamic that I'm seeing with the auto industry, the rail industry, Britain, what they're doing, Brexit, all of this coming into play. Interesting stuff. We'll talk about that in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back in a moment.
You're listening to a Breadbox Media podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 50 minutes every afternoon. Well, we don't really know where all of this is going. I do believe there's a pretty significant degree of time will tellness to all of this. But We've seen some interesting moves when you got a president-elect basically saying you're going to have to move your manufacturing into the U.S., not expand into Mexico. And now there's been at least three automakers with some sort of what seems like a hand slap or perhaps some degree of reprimanding taking place. It's an interesting dynamic, which is playing out right now, even before Trump takes the presidency. And I think that that's a very, very interesting, at the very least, dynamic that we see happening. So there's that. And Chrysler, I just posted this, the latest, after Toyota having had some even stock devaluation as a result of some of the things that President-elect Trump had said. Ford, of course, pulling their plans out of Mexico, keeping it in the U.S. Then GM with some degree of harsh criticism as well. And now Chrysler, the latest, basically saying, well, we're going to keep everything here. So a couple of questions, I guess, that I have. One is, and I don't know, and maybe this is not public, maybe we wouldn't know about it anyway, but I think we would, because we saw it with Carrier, right? Here's the example that I'm talking about, the tax incentives. The tax incentives, which essentially, call it what you will, it's corporate welfare, essentially, to say, we're going to give you this type of tax break. That's money that the company now has that they didn't have before. So was it, hey, we're going to levy a tariff against you if you're bringing these cars in that you've made in other countries, but if you keep them here, we'll give you a tax break? I don't know. Carrier, we know they got that deal. Was there something about these conversations? And apparently there were conversations. From what I understand, the higher-ups of these companies had at least some kind of phone call to the president-elect to talk about all of this. I don't know. But in this, what I find very fascinating, and we haven't heard necessarily any definition, but who knows? I think it's worth speculating, and at least it's an interesting conversation, interesting thought. And that is the story I posted regarding Britain's push for essentially a new infrastructure for their rail system. And the one thing I do know is that Donald Trump is a huge Brexit fan. If you recall, the day the Brexit decision was announced, he was in Scotland, and he was saying, we love this Brexit thing, and we're going to do the same thing in America. And which, you know, not sure how you leave a union when you're in America, but maybe NAFTA, maybe that's one, right? Maybe NATO, maybe that's the other one, right? You leave any alliance or leave anything that you got. It's all completely independence. Who knows? I don't know. But the one thing that President-elect Trump did say is that we're going to do something like this. We value this. We appreciate it. And this nationalists sort of movement into hyper-nationalism to the point that you're going to even isolate yourself within your network, this is what we've seen in the Brexit vote. So now, word is on the news of Great Britain saying, we need to revamp, upgrade, redo, build new infrastructure for our rail system. Now, again, pure conjecture, pure speculation, not exactly sure where any of this could lead, but could there be something? And I'm not saying it's going to cripple the auto industry, and I certainly hope it doesn't. I would hope that President-elect Trump, as a businessman, would have enough savvy to say, let's keep these industries afloat, because they're huge. They're huge. I mean, they're so huge that in 2009, we thought they were too big to fail. Just as some banks were too big to fail, the auto industry was too big to fail. Therefore, we need to give them bailouts where we can. Ford Motor Company did not take that bailout. the others did, the other domestic auto manufacturers. So who knows? Who knows where this is ultimately going? And again, I don't think it's going to come down to the crippling of the auto industry. But the question I'm asking, the dots I'm trying to connect, and some may think I'm crazy for connecting them, we see Donald Trump with a significant degree of criticism for the auto industry, to the point, again, that stock devalues. Then you have a lot of promises. And I did some research on this because I thought, am I crazy? Am I putting two and two together that and trying to make it equal 10? What am I doing here? But it turns out there has been some traction already. Conversations, discussions, whatever promises made to the railroad industry from President-elect Trump. And so could there be, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm having a speculative conversation, kind of going, is there something to it? Am I perhaps seeing a connectiveness that hasn't necessarily even been outlined yet? But could there be? And this is where I think it's interesting. If the federal government decided we're going to invest in a major transportation project, which happened, of course, when the interstates were built, but those interstates were simply free to the public use. Yes, it provided government jobs and contractor jobs and however it was built and whoever benefited from that. Yes, there was an economic boost, but it wasn't a sustainable boost that says there's something about this product itself that we're creating which will generate anything other than the fact that, yes, it's a system that commerce can use this system when it comes to logistics, moving their stuff from here to there. But think about this. What if there was a new project of a federal rail system? And it was twofold: to increase, of course, freight delivery, but also for commuting, for public transportation use. And the hope would be that just like major cities where their rail system is a generator, or even their transportation system, even with a bus system, is a generator for revenue for the government, the local government, that federal system could be exactly that. Because now you've got paying customers. Unlike people who hop in their cars and drive the freeway, you now have paying customers on the rail system. Now, we haven't, to my knowledge, and maybe I don't know enough about all the things that have been mentioned, but I did a lot of research, I know, during the election to kind of get some policy points and understand all of the candidates. I haven't seen any promises made specifically in that fashion from Trump's side, but I think it's interesting to consider that, wow, what if that was the case? What if there was some master plan that we still don't even know about? And I don't want you to think that I'm totally anti-Trump and I'm suspicious of everything he's saying. But if there was a way to say, hey, you know, we're going to keep the auto industry in check, because that's happened. Whether you realize it or not, that's happened. We've gotten major players coming in and going, okay, well, we're going to play this game because where they promise something again from some sort of tax reduction, or was it simply, we know we got to play this game. If we're going to play, we've got to play this game. We're not going to oppose this president because of political expedience would not allow that. I don't know. But I do know they've responded. By and large, across the board, there has been a response. So already we're seeing the influence that is the Trump administration before the Trump administration even begins. So with that, could there be a door opening into let's create a new rail infrastructure, let's bring jobs, because look at what that does, right? Now you're talking about steel manufacturing. Now you're talking about labor, some sort of labor on the ground doing this actual physical moving. You're talking about guys like Caterpillar benefiting because they've got to move some land. They got to do some things there. And then you build a structure that isn't just built and it's done and like, okay, now we got to maintain it. The maintenance now has a profit center because people are using it and paying for it. If it isn't designed, it should be, right? If it isn't designed, it should be. If that's not part of this, well, there's a brilliant idea. It should happen. And it should happen with the very solid both and understanding that the auto industry is going to remain beneficial to this symbiotic relationship with the rail industry, and transportation is going to get better all around, and still cars will be sold, cars will be delivered, cars will be used. All of this will be a part of this grand scheme of infrastructure and transportation. Who knows? Could be interesting. More to come. Speaking of interesting, looking at what Planned Parenthood's cook booking numbers look like. More in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to BreadBox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. BreadBox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Hour Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Kind of gave the Golden Globes a hard way to go at the beginning of the show. I would never sit down and watch an entire one of these. But I do watch the excerpts, and I saw what Meryl Streep had to say when it came to the challenges of Hollywood being a place where everybody's from, everywhere else, and pointed out some of the immigrant, and not only immigrant, but even heartland and kind of this amalgam of people who were assembled there and where they were from, a touching tribute to those who were there. Then talks about this protection of the press that is so important and how this attitude of disrespect and cruelty can filter down into the culture. And then, then gave this Carrie Fisher quote, as she said, my dearly departed friend, Princess Leia, take your broken heart and make it art. You know, that's... Yeah, I got to say that in all of that, there's beauty. There's beauty in what she had to say. And there is something, and this is true of all art. There's something about Hollywood. There's something about any piece of cinematography, any piece of photography, painting, sculpture, music, writing, you name it. Artisanship, right? Craftsmanship that is true artisanship. There's something about those elements that are uniting because they're transcendent, because there's something about creativity. And I've said this many times, God is a God of creation, right? God is a God that has been doing nothing but creating. I think we talk about God is love. Well, yes, but, right? Yes, but God creates, continues creation perpetually and unceasingly creative. And when we're able to tap a bit of that, when we're able to be a part of that creative process, I say, I've always said this, and I will continue to say this, we are most like God, when we're there. This is the nature with which we share that opportunity to inspire others and to be inspired and to grow in ways that perhaps we wouldn't if we didn't, right? We wouldn't if we didn't. Because when we do find ways to use our creative ability, I believe it's some of the truest expression that we can ever have. True to who we are, true to who we were created to be, in the likeness and image of our God, who is a God of creation. Therefore, we are creators as well. We are creative people. So, we can take that nature that is there, and we can be creative in the sense of perhaps it's art, perhaps it's entrepreneurship, perhaps it's providing opportunities for others, perhaps it's gardening, perhaps it's farming, perhaps it's doing whatever it is within our creative capacity that we know really is us, because, man, when we're doing it, it's where our, I call it breathing pure oxygen, right? We're in this mode of, we are so in the moment, we are so there. It's timeless, timeless, truly timeless. There is no time. We're not watching a clock. We don't care. We're doing what we're doing, and it is what we do, and it is how we express ourselves most truthfully, because it's our truest nature. I know athletes who function in that world when they're doing what they do. I've seen, let's put it this way, growing up as I did in the country, I've seen people who are so connected to the land. They're so at home and at one in that world. It's just beautiful to see. I mean, it's inspiring. I got to admit, I wasn't that guy. It was kind of tough for me being out in the country, not being that guy. I promise you, that's not always good. But I saw it. I watched it. So I see what Meryl Streep is saying. I see where she's going. And I value that. Even though I'm not crazy about award shows, I'm still not. That's an inspiring piece that she presents there. And I think it's important what she said. And it was eloquent. And it was needed. It was something that needed to be said. So if you haven't seen that video, it's getting shared by the millions upon millions now. So pretty easy to find. You can take a look at that. So speaking of creativity, you know, there are ways to be creative that are true, and there are ways to be creative that are false, because our creative capacities can lead into a falsity. And I think that that's what we see that has happened here in the situation that is outlined in this Catholic News Agency article that I posted over my Facebook page that essentially talks about the book cooking that has happened with Planned Parenthood. I think we've suspected this for some time. Now it seems to be coming out with some pretty clear validation of the accusations that say that Planned Parenthood has been dishonest in their Medicaid reimbursements, dishonest in what they've done when it comes to double dipping or misappropriating that reimbursement. So, you know, when you think about the federal funding that's there and you think about what these guys get on an annual basis, and then to know that this probe has seemed to prove that there's a tremendous degree of creative accounting, which we knew anyway. We knew that there was creative accounting simply for the fact that they say, well, abortion is just a small percentage of what we do. Knowing that they account for services and they just include abortion in that service, that means they could give out a pack of condoms, right? Well, how many condoms do we give out? 12 of those in the pack. Okay, how many of those packs do you give? Okay, 3 of those. All right, well, that's 36 services. But how many abortions do we do today? 3? Okay. Well, it's less than 10%. See?
creative accounting. We knew that they did this. But now it appears as though the truth of the matter is that they've done other things that were creative in order to make money off the government, while at the same time having a tremendous amount of subsidy. And this is what I've said. If a nonprofit has a profit, do they need a subsidy? If a nonprofit has a profit, do they need any donation? If whatever they, you know, it's not illegal for a nonprofit to sell goods and services. You can do that. Nor is it illegal for a nonprofit to have a profit, which would be considered retained earnings in the nonprofit world. I was in that world for a number of years and know it well. But there's nothing wrong with either of those things, except for the fact that we're now giving them taxpayer money on top of all of that. That's wrong. Whether you agree with what they do or not, simply understand that no one needs subsidies if they have retained earnings. Those who need subsidies are those who have no earnings. This seems like a misappropriation of funding on our behalf when it could go to programs or people who need it. Why would we do this? Well, there are many things we do out of political expediency, and I believe this is one. I think there's political expediency on both sides of the equation, left and right, conservative and liberal, and generally that political expediency can lead to areas of challenged ethic. This is one of those. It's one of those from the left side that says we're doing things that have significant questionable ethic. Profitable businesses do not need any kind of subsidy. Business, profitable nonprofits, organizations do not need a subsidy. I'm sorry. This all needs to be reassessed, reevaluated, and determined exactly who needs what. And regardless, the delayed in videos definitely brought new attention to Planned Parenthood, a new light being shined upon what they're doing, and we know that there's been tremendous scrutiny as a result of that. But let's say everything they were doing was on the complete up and up. You got retained earnings, you're showing a profit, and we're basically subsidizing you at that level. It's crazy. That is crazy. And why we don't see that is beyond my comprehension. It's not a political thing, really. It's a degree of prudence. Running out of time. That's all we have time for. Follow me over on Facebook. You'll see all of these things I talk about here on the show, and you can get into deeper discussions with me there. That's all we have time for this afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.